There's a great mystery that's in plain sight. Now, if you were to get on a plane today, tomorrow, not the holy day, get on a plane tomorrow, and you were to fly to Peru, and you were to visit the Nazca Desert, you would start walking around this desert and looking around. And as you walked, you would come upon on the ground what looks like, normally there's red pebble everywhere, and the ground is very, very red. You come upon a place where that's scraped away, you know, and kind of a maybe this wide or wider than that, and a big kind of like thing where underneath it, it exposes the white, exposes the gray color that's underneath it. So mostly you see red, and then all of a sudden you see white. Now, as you look at this, you turn your head and see, oh, that thing goes way up there. It seems to keep going, and it's going for quite a bit of a distance, and it doesn't even look straight. I can't quite understand what this thing is. And you could walk it and trace it and go, what is this thing in the desert? And as you walk, you wouldn't see any plants. You wouldn't see a garden. You don't see any water flowing through it. In fact, you scratch your head because as you walk it, it even curves around up there and goes this way and then maybe back that way and then in a circle. And you just go, I have no idea what this thing is. So you step over that and you walk maybe 50, 100 feet over that way. And all of a sudden you see another one of these. Another one of these things in the desert. Oh, well, this one kind of looks like it might run parallel to that one. And yes, it does. But then it turns over here and it does this. And there's no rhyme or reason to this. And as you walk around, you would see these things all over the place. And you would have no clue what they are. That is until you go up high. Until you get in an airplane or you climb up the top of a mountain. Because in the Nazca Desert in Peru, there are these huge, large geoglyphs that are sketched and carved into the floor of the desert. But they are super long, 1,200 feet or more in length. And if you sit there and look at it from the ground level, you have no idea what this is. It looks like just a bunch of rocks have been moved. But if you take an airplane up, and this is where a lot of the geologists and archaeologists have discovered this, is as they're flying into the place, you can see that above, that thing that looked just like a piece of scraped away pebbles is actually a huge picture of maybe a monkey or a bird or a human being or a crop or something like that. And then as you fly and you go, wow, how did you put that together? If you're on the ground and you're drawing something of that magnitude, when you get up in the sky, it looks almost perfect, really nicely done, parallel lines. You can see it's drawn very nicely. But you wouldn't know that when you're on the ground, so you have to get up high. That is like a mystery hidden in plain sight. You walk and stumble across it, and you have no idea what it is until you get to the right altitude, the right level, the right height, and all of a sudden it comes together, and you can see, oh, that's what this is. That's what this is. You know, just like in the desert, God has done the same thing. God has created a puzzle. God has created a mystery. God has put a mystery and written it down. He didn't write it in Klingon or some other language. He wrote it in English, with English words and English sentences. Well, it's translated there. Let me just say it that way. It's written down for us, translated into English, in pure sentences. If you read them, they make sense. If you were to recite them, they would make sense. But yet people read them and they do not understand it. They can't get the mystery. There's a mystery that God has stuck in plain sight that most people cannot get. And it has everything to do with this day. It has everything to do with the day of Pentecost. It has everything to do with you and I sitting here. And what is that? Let me just quote Proverbs 25:2. It says, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. It's the glory of God who can do this. You know, we have an amazing God and Father, and I always find it fascinating, the many facets of his brain. Because here's one, he loves puzzles, and he loves riddles, and he loves things where you can obfuscate things, you can put them and weave them into words, but yet most of the people won't get it. Only some can. And he makes a puzzle. He says, it's the glory of God to do this. It's the glory of him to do that. But who are the kings? It's the glory of a king to search it out. Who are the kings? Think about this. Who are you and I? Who are you and I? You and I are kings. We're kings in training. Kings and queens are to rule. One day, we are those kings. It says it's the glory of the kings to search this out, to find it, to look for it, to explore it, to want to know it, to seek it. So God hides, makes a mystery, and it's us to also to understand it. But why would you do this? Why won't you just be plain and say it plainly? Why would you need to hide something like this? Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 2, verse 6. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 6. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 6. Very interesting scripture. I always find this super fascinating, the implications of it. Because this is the mystery he's talking about. It says, 1 Corinthians 2, and verse 6. However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom of God, ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew. For had they known, they would have not crucified the Lord of glory. Fascinating what that's saying is that what God wrote and is called the wisdom of God in a mystery, and he writes it that way, and it's hidden. And he wrote it and did this on purpose because he says, the rulers of this age do not understand it. They do not get this mystery that God is doing. Because if they were to have gotten it, they would not have killed the Christ. They would not have gone through with what the sacrifice of Christ. And it goes on to say in verse 10, but God's revealed them to us through his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. And this comes back to this day that when God gives and grants his Spirit, which he did on this day of Pentecost to his church, this is the thing that unlocks that. Now, spiritual rulers of this world, as we know, Satan, all the other realms that are maybe their ruling, don't see it. Don't get it. You can't know the things of God unless you have the Spirit of God. You can't know the things of God unless you have the Spirit of God. Satan does not. Satan will take and twist. He may be the most cunning. He may be the most whatever being, smart, clever, as he thinks, trickery. But he can't get this. He doesn't get this. Because you think about that. That's saying that if he really got that, he wouldn't have gone through. If he really knew what he was doing in killing the Christ, he was so angry and so mad at this, and he thought he was, you know, weak and everything else, that he went through with it. But it was to his demise. It dethroned him. It paved the way for all of us to be able to come to him and to be saved. And most importantly, it paved the way to create something which is called his church and put it together on this day of Pentecost. If he would have known all of these things, he wouldn't have gone through with it. So, therefore, what we see is that God wrote this like he did in plain sight, but as a mystery. So it's not completely obvious, but when you have a spirit, you can see it and you can unlock it that way. Quite fascinating when you think about that whole thing. You know, when you read and you think about how clever and God is, and when you think about the evil that Satan is, that Satan always undermines what God does. But God, in this case, out of wisdom, outsmarted Satan. You know, Satan is not too happy about that. Satan is full of pride in who he is and how clever and how smart and beautiful and everything else. And God outsmarted him. God did a mystery and shows his wisdom. And that's why it's to the glory of God when we see what he's done. And as we go through this, we see the glory of God in this, in what he hid there in plain sight for us. Pentecost has everything to do with this, in this mystery of this day. Because on this day was the day that God gave his Holy Spirit. And that's the definition of his people or his church, is those who have his spirits, the spiritual body of those who have received God's Spirit. And so those with the Spirit we see being established on this day, we're given that, and you see all the things that took place. Now, it's a mystery. And what I want to go through is there's a lot of aspects of this mystery. But for the sake of time today, I'm just going to cover three aspects of this mystery, of what it is for the church, the mystery of the church. There's a lot of other things we could talk around this, but let me just cover three of these things. Why is it a mystery, too? One reason is you're not going to hear a lot of other churches talk like this. It's not well known or established how some of God has put it together. Let's go to mystery one. Turn to Luke 4, verse 5. Mystery number one. Luke 4, starting in verse 5. Luke 4, starting in verse 5. Mystery number one is this. There are two kingdoms. And the devil is given authority by God and rules the kingdom that's on this earth. That's mystery number one. You don't hear that a lot. In fact, you don't even hear anything about the devil. But the reality is there are two kingdoms. And the devil was given authority by God and rules a kingdom here on this earth. He rules a kingdom. And we see this in Luke 4, verse 5. Cutting into the middle where the devil took Christ to tempt him. It says, he taking him up into a high mountain, he showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, all this authority I will give you in their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. Therefore, if you will worship me, all will be yours. You know, obviously Satan said, get thee behind me. You only should worship God. So Satan is saying, though, but the point I want to pull out of this is that that was for Satan's to give. He said right there, this has been delivered to me. All of the kingdoms of the earth are under my jurisdiction right now, under my rule right now. All of this is mine, been given to me to rule. Why was he in the Garden of Eden? It's because of this very reason. He was given jurisdiction on this earth. He was there. He was around. It's been given to him. And he says, look, I could give this to you. You want to rule this one day? You don't have to go through that death. I'll give it to you now. Look how beautiful it is. Look at the glory of the magnificence of the pyramids and everything else that you see here. He says it's mine to deliver. And what this teaches us is that there is a kingdom that Satan is over that's on this earth, and he has been given jurisdiction with that. Given jurisdiction. Now, turn to Matthew 12, 25. Matthew 12, verse 25. He rules. But when Pentecost came, and in select periods of time before that through history, God was doing something. God was taking and coming into that kingdom that rules this earth and doing something. And Matthew 12, 25 tells us this. Breaking into the middle of another thought as well, it says, Jesus knew their thoughts, and he said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And every city or house divided against itself will not stand. If Satan cast out Satan, he's divided against himself. How then will his kingdom stand? His kingdom. Christ declares that he has a kingdom. There is one there. We see Christ say this. We see Satan say this. He's given jurisdiction. There is a kingdom that he rules over. And this was casting out demons in the context saying, hey, if he's casting out himself, his kingdom's divided. So there's a certain, you know, rule and tightness with this kingdom to rule. It's obviously done by fear, control, and everything else, but not divided to try and be one and be a kingdom. And that's what he's saying here. If he's divided against himself, how's this kingdom going to actually stand? Verse 27, if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore, they shall be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, surely, what? The kingdom of God has come upon. Now we have another kingdom mentioned. There's the kingdom of this world. We have another kingdom mentioned. It's come upon you. Or how can one enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first bind the strong man? And then he will plunder his house. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. Interesting parable there. And sometimes I think we interpret that wrong. Verse 29, how can you enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods? In this case, who's the strong man it's referring to? Who do you think it's referring to there? Someone has a house, someone has a strong man. In this case, it's referring to the ruler of this world. There's a house here that's a strong man. Satan has his grip on the entire world. He has the entire week. I won't quote all the scriptures, but we know them. He's got the entire world under his captivity. The prince of the power of the air. There's a whole bunch of scriptures that rules and talks about how he has his grip on this world. And it says, how can he enter a strong man's house, someone who's ruling with a strong hand, and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man? That says, I've got to make that strong man ineffective. I have to bind so he no longer has control over those who I want to plunder. Think of it that way. Christ has now entered this kingdom, this world, this house. His sacrifice and his death enabled it so he can bind the strong man, make him ineffective and powerless, and he can come and pick and pluck and plunder who he wants. That's how that's read. That's what the scripture means. And Christ is saying that, hey, you know what? There's another kingdom that's on the scene that is now walking right into this kingdom, the one that rules this earth, and I'm picking up here and there, and I'm plundering who I want, and I am plopping them into my kingdom now. Colossians 1, verse 13 also tells us this. Colossians 1, verse 13 says the same thing. It says, he has delivered us from the power of darkness and conveyed us into the kingdom of the Son of his love. Conveyed isn't usually a word you and I use unless you work on a conveyor belt, or I guess, I don't know. That doesn't have a huge amount of meaning, but he's conveyed us. It sounds squishy, but it's not. It's actually saying that I picked you up and I have moved you over under another one. I physically, spiritually, I've put you over underneath another kingdom. You're no longer under the power, no longer under the authority, no longer under the jurisdiction of this kingdom. I have conveyed, I have moved you over and stuck you under the power and the authority of this kingdom. So it's not conveying a lot, but that's what that means. It's saying that you now are no longer under the authority, the jurisdiction of that strong man, the ruler of the kingdom of this earth. You are now under the jurisdiction of the kingdom of the Son of his love. Now, it's a hard concept for us to completely get, but you can also think of it like, I know you watch movies every once in a while, but somebody's always in a foreign country, maybe they're from the U.S. or something, and they get themselves in trouble, or, you know, the rebels are after them, and they start tearing, running, and they're like, where can I go for safety? And it's like, guess where they go? U.S. Embassy. And you see them running, and last second, they're being chased and through the doors, and oh, they can't be touched. Right? That's the whole idea here is the same thing for you and I. You know, think of it like that. You no longer have to be touched. You no longer have to be under that. You no longer have to be whatever influences you. You don't have to be. You can call upon this. Your authority that you're under now is this one. God puts you under this one, and you don't have to be subject to that one, is what he's saying. It's just like the embassy you can run to. You can say, man, I need this. Protect me. You can call upon that. It's not your own power. That's God, Christ, and the authority that you've been put underneath is where you're at now. And that's what it means. We've been moved into under the authority of the Son of his love now. And the power of the darkness, he's delivered. We're not underneath that anymore. And what we find, though, is what's interesting about this mystery is that God has done that. But God has not taken you out of this world, has he? God is not taking you when he calls you and does that and plops you somewhere else in some remote Himalayan mountain, you know, in some temple in the middle of nowhere. You're actually still right here in the middle of this. And this is another part of God's wisdom that he's showing, because he is pulling you out of that, but leaving you right in the middle of that. What does Satan think? He's like, yeah, you don't stand a chance. I got you. I got you. And God's saying, oh, wait a second. I'm going to leave you right here. You know, what did he pray before he died? He says, you know, I don't pray that you take them out of the world, but you keep them from the evil one, right? He said, and he prayed for us that way, that we would stay there. But he wants us to be protected. Now, we're plopped right in the middle of Satan's world, right in the middle of all the things that surround us, with different values, with different rulership, with different everything. This makes no sense to Satan. He's like, what? There's no way they're going to last. There's no way they're going to make it, is what he says. You're not going to make this. And not only that, look who you pulled out. It's not really the cream of the crop, is it there? You know, God says he calls the weak of the world. God calls, you know, things that aren't the best necessarily. You know, and that's who we are. And Satan goes, that's crazy. Are you kidding me? Because what's Satan all about? Satan's all about the best looking, the smartest, the fastest, the most, you know, who can be the big person in the room and all this. Whereas Christ came and was mocked because he seemed weak. He seemed like a lamb, like he gave up his life. He had all this power, he gave it. And Satan's like, what in the world? Why'd you give that up? I tried to ascend on high and take the throne. That's what I want. And you see these values of this kingdom and this kingdom diametrically opposite. But God did not take you out of this. He left us here. And Satan thinks that is crazy. And not only that, but he pulled people out like, I don't know about you, but I love my church family. But I don't know how many of you I would ever run into in my normal life if I wasn't in the church, just because of situations and work and other things. But man, look who God has put together and look how we've come together. It's fascinating to me. That's part of the wisdom of God, that he pulls a bunch of people from a bunch of different backgrounds that probably never would have been together. And guess what we do? We're sitting in a room right now. You and I are sitting in a room. We're about to break bread together, about to have some great fellowship together. And I love it. I never would have thought that. Part of this is the wisdom of God. It's not because, you know, we always say, oh, I think God probably called me because I have a special quality. Yeah, it's called being base. One of the base things of the world. That's what he says. God didn't call you because you're special. He called you to be special. And it's to his glory, not ours. Not some special ability. It's to God's glory. He's going to bring us there. So God calls this weak, base, small group, not huge, looks kind of odd, normally wouldn't be together, and he plops them down. Satan goes, what in the world are you doing? And you know what? This is the wisdom of God. When it talks about it, Satan cannot understand this. Satan can't understand this one bit. And so the main purpose of the realm of Satan is to overcome the church. Turn to Matthew 16, verse 18. So we're in this world, but we're not under its jurisdiction. You can claim, hey, I am a son of God. I am part of your kingdom. I call upon the name of Christ. I call upon that authority. Please protect me. And that's like you running to an embassy. You can claim that. This is what we are, but we're left here. We're left here. Matthew 16, verse 18, it says, and I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. And the gates of Hades shall not, or hell shall not prevail against it. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. You know, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities. And what this is really telling us here is the evil realm that we're a part of has the main objective to overcome the church. Overcome, what do you mean? So the gates of death or hell shall not prevail against it. And we read that and go, yes, the church will always remain. It will not die out, right? And that's true. That's part of what this means. The church is not going to die out physically. God will always keep it. Even if it's small, even if it's in hiding, there's always going to be the church that's there. But that's one thing. There's two aspects of death and overcoming death, and that death won't prevail against the church. First one is death physical. That's what I just said. It won't die out. You'll always have the church. It will always be there no matter what, somewhere in hiding. But the second aspect of death is the spiritual second death. Spiritual second death means where you don't repent and you willfully keep sinning and you reject God's way of life. There's nothing left but death. If you don't repent of sin, then it's death is the penalty of that, as we know. And it means that too, that the job or what Satan is trying to do to the church is, yeah, he wants to eliminate it physically, but he wants to overcome you to get you to stay in sin so that you die. Another death, the second death. So it's both of those meanings here. So when it says the gates of hell will not prevail, that's also what it means. God will grant you and I a victory and protection so that we can live a life. We can be born into his kingdom and not the gates of hell will not overcome you with the sin. That's why when we come together as a church, it's important for us to come together. This is one of the things that the body and being together does for us, is to give us that. So it means those two things. The spiritual realm that we're part of is after you. But God says and grants the victory ahead of time that it's not going to prevail, that I am the author and finisher of your faith. I'm going to bring you there no matter what, and it won't prevail. Death now or death spiritually, either one of those two things. Power of the grave is not over you. So the first part of this mystery is we find that there are two kingdoms. There are two kingdoms. And Satan rules on the kingdom of this earth. Now, let's add to that. Mystery number two is there is protection with the church, with the body. I already covered part of what that was talking about being able to claim it. But let's turn back to Revelation 12, verse 13. Let's cover one aspect of protection. A lot of aspects of protection. This is one of them, found in Revelation 12, verse 13. Revelation 12, 13. It says, "Now, when the dragon saw that he had been cast to earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child," the woman being the church. "But the woman who was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent." So we see a time where there is a protection from all the events that are going on is number one, as we know from the as a place of safety. That's part of being the woman, part of the woman in the church, the body, spiritual body. God will know who are his, and he will protect them. There's an important part in verse 15. It says, "So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." Came out of his mouth a flood. It's very interesting, because this is, there's a number of ways you could think about this. One way that is true is that the serpent is going to spew a lot of things, going to say a lot of untruths, going to bring a flood of things to you to try to overwhelm you. If you think about this in today's society, I don't know about you, but if you wake up, if you pick up your phone within 2 minutes, you are overwhelmed and bombarded with the news and the royal wedding and, you know, something that Trump did today and something over here. And this is, and you, it's just an incredible amount of things that come at you. Not only that, how connected we are, which is both a great thing. I'm in the high-tech world, love it, but it also can be a dual-edged sword. You can be overwhelmed with all types of opinions and things. All types of things can flood you. Hey, I need to find out an answer about a Bible. Let me go search on the internet, and I get 27 different opinions that are out there. How do I know what's true? That's a flood. And Satan deliberately is going to attack you that way, going to give you so many things and so many ideas and so many things to overwhelm you, flood you. And that's how he attacks. Out of his mouth is coming a bunch of lies and things and ideas. You know, if a lot of these ideas that come around the church, you trace them back. They were here 30 years ago. They were here 50 years ago. They were here 200 years ago. They were here in 200 AD. Nothing's new. It just constantly comes back at us to kind of recirculate us. And the point about this is there's help provided for the woman, for the church, to swallow that up and to be a protector. So what we find is there's protection in the church. Turn to 1 Timothy 3:15. And this is how there's protection. 1 Timothy 3:15. First Timothy 3:15 says, "But if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourselves in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth." The pillar and ground of truth. This is an important function of the body in the church, is to be and to protect and to have the truth. It's important for us to get together as a body, to hear the truth, to be reminded of the truth. It's the pillar and the ground of truth. The church is. This is a purpose. This is why it was founded. There's protection. When I say protection, not just place of safety, but protection from the flood that you're going to get, from the ideas that are going to flow, from the things that you think, wow, that's fascinating. That one, I really feel like I have some special knowledge now. Come to church. Get grounded. Hear the truth. That's the purpose of it, is to be a pillar and the ground of truth so that we may come back and be protected from that. So protection is not just physical place of safety. Protection is being protected from the ideas that are going to be spewed at you, the things that are going to be flooded and flooding you from Satan's mouth. That is a protection that we have here. So it's a very important part for us as we think about the church, is that we protect the truth, that we make sure that we are very founded in the Bible, the doctrine, what's there, what Christ says, and that we preserve that and we keep that. And it's not just, hey, you know, this year we changed everything. Do we grow in our understanding? Absolutely. Do we change where we need to? Absolutely. But we also protect what we've been given, and it's very important for that we have that. That's a big pillar of the church. There's protection here. So when we meet, that's a reason to come. That's a reason to hear it. That's a reason to be in and around it. Now, that's the second one. There's protection. And the aspect I'm bringing out is the protection of the truth from the flood of Satan. The third mystery, Ephesians 3 and verse 9. Now we get to a big purpose of the church. A really big reason why we're given a church and a body together. Ephesians 3 verse 9 says, and to make all see what is the fellowship of the mystery, again, which from the beginning of the ages has been hidden in God, who created all things through Jesus Christ, to the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church. This wisdom that God has done is being made known by us, by the church. So we say, yeah, I know. We got a website. We've got a Beyond Today. We've got good news programs. We've got, no. That's not what it's saying. Who is this being made known to? The wisdom that God is doing is being made known to who? God make known by the church to the principalities and the powers in heavenly places, according to the eternal purpose which he accomplished in Christ, Lord our Jesus. Now, this is super interesting. This is super interesting. God is showing the manifold wisdom of his way and what he's doing. To who? You and I are demonstrating the wisdom of God. To who? To the spiritual principalities and powers. That's what it says. In heavenly places. We're in this world under a rule. Now we're taken out of, but we're still around it. But what we're demonstrating is that you and I are actually showing this wisdom of God to the spiritual world. You and I's purpose isn't just to send the good news and Beyond Today or whatever it is. That's part of things. But your purpose, if you want to think about it and wake up in the morning, is you're demonstrating, us as a body are demonstrating, that this way works. It's a way of wisdom to the principalities and spiritual powers. That's, you're being watched. You're being watched right now. And all of those powers say you're going to fail. And it makes absolutely no sense. And this is ridiculous. And look at these people and listen to the silly stuff they're saying. Yet you're still here. Yet you're still overcome. Yet you put away sin. Yet around all of this stuff, you don't choose that. You choose this. It's absurdly maddening to the spiritual world to see this. But it's demonstrating the wisdom of God. What you and I do. He built the church to demonstrate it to those who are the rulers of this earth that his way works. That his wisdom, that may look like foolishness, is something that actually works. And boy, do they want you to fail. Obviously. They want to overcome you with the ways of this world and the sin. But we're on notice. We are being watched. So this is quite an interesting thing when you think about that. If you know this, if you know you're being watched, how do you think that would make you act as well? What you would go, huh, I am here. I want to be here. I know this way works. I like it. I love it. And I'm going to, with purpose, demonstrate it. It won't make sense. This mystery won't make sense. But to God's glory, if I want to glorify and you want to glorify God, you walk his way. You show that as God called you and put you here, even in the middle of this world, right in the middle of it, that it works. That you show it. You demonstrate that. And so the value systems are completely at odds with each other. The ways of this world and you in the value system of the kingdom and as Christ lived. And we are showing and demonstrating as our lives and as just being here together, just eating together, the wisdom of God actually works despite all of these things. So there's a great purpose with the church. And I think we need to think about it a little bit differently because we're being watched and we are to demonstrate to the principalities and powers that his way is correct. And if you think about this and you know you're on display, you know that you're being watched, how would and how should we act? And this is embodied in the day of Pentecost and what happened back when the Spirit was given. What were they like? What were they when the Spirit was given? They were together. They were unified. Let's turn to Ephesians. Let's finish up here in Ephesians. Just in Ephesians 4. We'll finish up with a couple scriptures in Ephesians. If you want to look at a book that's about instructions to the church, then Ephesians is it. And the purpose and the meaning of us together, it's Ephesians. And so there's a lot of depth in Ephesians when you think about the church. And this day is the founding of that. And the founding of the church is the giving of the Spirit. And those with God's Spirit form his body, his church. And God knows those who are his. And so Ephesians 4 tells us some instructions. 4 verse 1, let's start there. It says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with longsuffering, bearing with one another in love. That's not how this world works. It's not the ways of the world. Lowliness, gentleness. World pretty type A, pretty driven, pretty power hungry, pretty strong man wins, strong woman wins. But we're long-suffering, bearing with one another, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit of the bond of peace. That's a key phrase. Keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. You have to endeavor at it. Endeavor means you have to work, right? It takes work. You know this with any group you're in. It's easy to go, and start to pick apart, start to divide, start to say, start to talk. You have to work at it. It's very important, as we know we're being watched, that unity is one of those things for us to keep, to work at, to want. The Spirit of God came in Pentecost with the church, and that is how it represented itself. It was unified and together back when the church was founded back then. Why? Verse 4, because there's one body, there's one Spirit. Just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. So endeavoring to keep the unity in doing it in these ways is a very important part. As you know, we're being watched, not just you as a person, but us as a body, the church. This crazy experiment that God's doing that looks crazy on the outside to the spiritual world. They think we're nuts. Truly. And then you and I sit here and go, wow, this is amazing. That's the wisdom of God, what he's doing when he implants it in there. And let's think about that. Satan, principalities, they want to pick apart this grand experiment. They want to stick things in there, ideas, and flood it with. They want us to bicker and fight. They want us to turn into instruments where, that person's wrong and I know I'm right, and we start going at it. Realize you're being watched and realize, whoa, am I endeavoring to keep the unity? Is that part of what I think and is part of my goal? Part of my wake up and I think about that this is so very, very important. That's what this is saying. Let's not be a weapon to be used by Satan. Let's be one that's of God's wisdom. Am I reflecting the wisdom of God every day I wake up? Am I bringing it together, endeavoring to keep the unity? Am I living and showing that this way works despite being in this world these days? And let's go down to verse 15. We'll finish here. Not only do we endeavor to keep the unity, but then there is a way that there's growth. Growth. Here's how it comes. It says, speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. These things are super important. This is how we grow. We always talk about growth as numbers, but this is not what this is talking about. It's not numbers. It's spiritual growth. You have spiritual growth, God will provide whatever numbers he wants. But our focus should be on our spiritual growth of us together. And how do we do that? Speaking the truth in love is one of the things. Everything we say must be done out of love, not out of to bash the person next to you and say, oh, you just are a big mess up. But yes, let's address this, but there's love behind it. Whatever we do and we say to each other should end up being encouraging, should be end up being uplifting, should be end up being strengthening. That's what we need when we come here every week out of this world, is to be strengthened, feel uplifted, encouraged. That's what we need. It says, may grow up in all things into him is another phrase. We have growing to do. And that means in him means being like Christ. So we start and do with love, but we grow in like Christ lived, how he did things. Who is the head? Christ. That's who he's talking about. We're not looking to men, not looking to ministers. We are looking to Christ. Our strength points to him as the head. We look to that. We seek that. How did he live? How did he demonstrate it? Ask him to lead us. Ask him to lead us as a group. We don't know our way. Help us. Help move us. We look to Christ. That's who we look to. And it goes on to say, from whom the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint supplies. Joining and knitting the body is a goal. It's a big purpose. That's what we strive for, not strife and divisions. And it requires every joint, every single one of us, every single one of us. The goal of church is not to get up here and speak. The goal of church for us is to be unified together. It requires all of us. It's just as important, the people that do the work in the kitchen behind today, as up here, as being together, as helping the person in need. This is how growth happens. The words are said, but the whole body has to be together in every single joint, and according to the effective working by which every part does its share. It's everyone. It's all of us together. And what happens when we pull those things together? It says it causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Growth. This is what we're striving for. This is all we all wish. This is all what we want. Don't you? I know we talk about that all the time, growth, but it's spiritual growth. We need to think about this. We spiritually grow. When you do that as a congregation, as people, guess what happens? Things happen. God supplies things. God supplies things. When you see a group that's growing alive and vibrant, things happen. God works, God molds, God uses, things go places. That's how it works. So it's all spiritual at the bottom. It's not just, let's add some numbers. Let's add some numbers. It's about spiritual growth at the core. If you want a body to grow, this is where it's at. And this is what this is telling us. So we've learned. There's an incredible mystery. It's written down in plain sight for us. There's two kingdoms. There's two kingdoms, and Satan rules over the one in this world, but you and I have been moved out of that and into another one. Secondly, the church has been provided and established for protection from the flood that comes out of Satan's mouth, from all the words, from all the ideas, and it's very important that the truth is here. And three, the reason why you and I are left into this world is to show and be a witness to the powers and the principalities that the wisdom of God works. And we should have this in our thinking as we're on display. So how should we act? You and I think about acting with unity, together, knit, joint as a body. And that is when growth comes. The entire world's watching this crazy experiment. It doesn't look like, by logic or anything, that could ever succeed, does it? But guess what? It's going to. It's going to. And that's the wisdom of God. And that's what this day shows us.